Good morning. My name is Jennifer Tom, and I'm with my co-host,
Darlene Rempel.
And we are excited because the whole year, the theme has been stories that heal. I've been blessed, and oh my goodness, all the losses we've been talking about in this show has been so amazing. And also, it's a reminder for all of us that there's more than 40 losses that we will all face in our lifetime. So every story is different. It's the different loss. We just ask that you listen with a heart, with ears, and because that's what we do, me and Darlene. Mm-hmm. And today, I just don't want to waste time because, oh my goodness, we have an amazing guest, Dr. Jody, in the house. Welcome, Dr. Jody. Welcome here.
I'm glad to be here.
So, yes, thank you so much. I just have to share that Dr. Jody and I are in a mastermind group together where we are being coached by Brenda Burchard, high performance coach. And Jody and I connected to this soul where we were able to connect and share, and you just felt like my sister. And I am so thankful you're here today.
I'm honored to be here, Jen, and just seeing you around the room. So Jennifer and I, we fly to LA once a month, and just seeing you in the room, I knew I needed to know you. Before we even had a conversation, I loved you.
Oh, that's the connection. That's the connection. And I'm just so great for you to be here and share your story. I have to tell all my friends who are listening and family that, listen here. Dr. Jody is a keynote speaker. And this is even better. Her whole life, she's committed her life to help those struggling with type 1 diabetes via virtual training programs and online courses. Please just listen to her story and please check out her work. Why this is so deeply for me, it touches me this deeply, is because type 1 diabetes has affected my family, has affected my friends. And I'm sure you're out there and you may know somebody who has type 1. So please tune in, invite your friends, grab your coffee, and let's go.
All right.
Yeah, so we're so excited to hear your story, and just a little bit I've heard, it's amazing. And I know there are people, and I've talked to people, especially kids, like our hearts are so open to kids, and knowing that what happens in our childhood so impacts the rest of our life. And so when we can do things well as children, we do it better as adults. So we are so excited to hear your story, because I know it starts when you were a kid. So if you want to just start with your story, we're excited to hear what you have to share.
I'm happy to share. Before I dive in, I do want to just differentiate, because most people are confused the difference between type 1 and type 2. Mm-hmm. And 90%+ of people that have diabetes actually have type 2 diabetes. And that actually is not what I work with, and nor is it what I have. So type 2 diabetes often is lifestyle related. Mm-hmm. Type 1 diabetes, so I was diagnosed when I was 7. And what type 1 diabetes is actually an autoimmune disease, where the immune system attacks the cells in the body that make insulin. And so since I was 7 years old, my body no longer makes any insulin. And insulin is a hormone absolutely necessary for life. If I were to stop injecting insulin, I would die within a few weeks or months. So you have to have insulin. And insulin's job is, once you eat, it doesn't matter if it's cookies, muffins, and cake sugar, or oatmeal, bananas, healthy carb sugar, glucose goes into your blood after you eat. And then that glucose needs to get to your cells to feed your cells. And insulin is the pickup truck. Insulin picks up the glucose out of the blood and feeds it to the cells. There's two important things that are going on here. Number one, you do not want too much glucose in your bloodstream, or else it causes heart disease, kidney failure, strokes, blindness, gangrene in the toes, limb amputations. You do not want too much glucose in your blood. The second thing is that your cells need to be fed. The glucose needs to get to your muscles. So that is insulin's job, is once you eat things that have glucose in it, glucose goes into your bloodstream, and then insulin is activated once it sees the glucose level in the blood go up. The insulin takes that glucose and it feeds it to the cells. When you have type 2 diabetes, which what I said is what the majority of people have, you can treat that condition very effectively by improving your health, improving your diet choices, exercising more, losing weight. That makes the whole insulin system that I just explained to you work more efficiently. In my case, my body doesn't make insulin. It's done. It's gone. If I lose weight, I still don't have insulin. If I eat healthier foods, I still don't have insulin. So type ones don't have the choice of reversing it. Interestingly, though, I call it autoimmune diabetes. That's the difference. Type 2 is more the weakness in the system that can be strengthened. Type 1 is autoimmune. The immune system attacks self and kills off the cells that make insulin. And we haven't figured out how to stop that process yet. There's a lot of research going into it, which is a whole different discussion. However, what's really interesting is it used to be called adult onset diabetes and juvenile diabetes. I had the juvenile, the lifestyle one was the adult. That's no longer the case, because even some children are eating so much sugar that they're getting type 2, which means their blood sugar levels are so high, they're eating so much sugar that their body can't make enough insulin to literally get all the glucose that they're ingesting out of the bloodstream. They're overloading their system. But interestingly, adults at any age now are getting autoimmune diabetes as well. So this is often goes unnoticed for many years. You can be in your 30s, 40s, 50s, or 60s. I have patients in all decades now. And it's very confusing because if you're over 20 or 30 and you have high blood sugar, the doctor is going to assume you're type 2, give you an oral med, and tell you to go home. But meanwhile, your immune system is attacking your insulin-producing cells, and eventually you might run out of insulin, which is not a healthy, it's called diabetic ketoacidosis. You'll have to go to the ER, et cetera. But type adult onset autoimmune diabetes is often missed, and the attack on the insulin producing cells is much slower. So they still make insulin and it's going down in production, just like mine did kind of very quickly, but it's going down much slower. So there are ways to, quote, slow down the attack on insulin producing cells in adults. And so sometimes you'll hear, oh, so-and-so, Halle Berry, for example, the theory is that she probably has, because in the news it said she reversed her type 1 diabetes. Well, you can't fully stop or reverse the autoimmune process, but you can definitely slow it down. And so when newly diagnosed children or adults come to me, I can help them slow down that autoimmune process. But late stage autoimmune diabetes usually always requires insulin injections. So I started on insulin injections when I was 7. Was that helpful? Did that make that clear?
Yeah, so helpful. As I did not know. I just had a little bit of information. I didn't have the detail. Thank you for sharing that. Makes it very clear.
The vast majority of people don't know the difference. So I explain that all the time. And I enjoy educating people, because people will come to me and say, oh, my grandmother died of diabetes. My, you know, my grandmother had her foot cut off, or my granddad went blind. And it's a bit upsetting to us with type 1 when people put us in the category of type 2, because it's a very different condition in terms of. So, for example, the What causes the damage in diabetes, be it type 1 or type 2, is high blood sugars. So if I can get my blood sugars really perfectly healthy, almost to like a non-diabetic level, I have zero risk of heart disease, kidney failure, strokes, all of those things that generally kill diabetics. Now, I keep really good blood sugar control. However, I have had 40 plus years of diabetes, and many of those years, my blood sugars were high. So inevitably, I do have a higher risk of the complications, but I am much, much in a better position than somebody that has had high blood sugars on and on and on, and they have an unhealthy diet and they don't exercise. It's very hard to put anyone with diabetes in a bucket category, because everybody with diabetes, one person could be super healthy, exercise, have really good blood sugar levels and have diabetes. And the other person could be eating tons of sugar, not work out, be overweight and have diabetes. So when people say, oh, you're a diabetic, so that means you, and they make an assumption, I'll always say, you cannot put all diabetics in the same bucket.
That sounds like you came from experience.
Do not compare me to your very unhealthy uncle or whatever, right?
Yeah. So how did that affect your childhood? Like, tell us a little bit about how that loss, how being diagnosed with diabetes affected you.
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. I was 7 years old. It was 1980. I wasn't feeling good for a week or two. My mom took me to the pediatrician. I peed in a cup. My pee was full of sugar. My mom started crying. I didn't know why. So I started crying. And then we were told we had to go check into the hospital. So of course I told my mom we needed to go home first and get my blanket and my teddy bear, because I'm not going to spend the night without my blanket and my teddy bear. So we did that. And I actually still have that blanket. Mm-hmm. And so I check into Seattle Children's Hospital. It's June 1980. Within 24 hours, I'm feeling better because my blood sugar level was probably 500, 600, 700, 800. And a healthy blood sugar level is 70 to 120. So I felt very sick with that much glucose in my bloodstream. And within 24 hours, 48 hours, they normalized that. They got me back into range. I felt fine, but I needed to stay there for several days so my parents could learn how to manage the fact that I had to start injecting this potentially lethal medicine every day for the rest of my life. If you take too much insulin, you can die. Because the insulin will take more glucose and more glucose and more glucose out of the bloodstream. And if the amount of glucose in your bloodstream goes too low, you have a seizure and you can die. So you never want to take too much insulin. But if you don't take enough insulin, then the blood sugar level goes high and increase my risk of heart disease, kidney failure, strokes, blindness. So every single day for the past 40 plus years, my job has been to try to keep my blood sugar in that perfect range. And when I was at the hospital, I didn't understand the gravity of this, of course. I felt better, and then I had a blast. I had cable on my bedside. The nurses and doctors would come in with clown noses. There was an arts and crafts room. I made little fun, I remember, popsicle stick house. I had cable on my bed when nobody had cable in 1980. We had three channels at home. So I felt like a princess at this hospital. And that is actually when I decided I wanted to become a doctor. So, however, the fun doesn't last. You got to go back home and live your life. And so now I had to start weighing and measuring all of my food. We got a scale for my bread. We used measuring cups for my rice and my noodles. I counted my 12 grapes. We got rid of the Fruit Loops and the Lucky Charms and the chocolate malt balls. And I was only allowed things with sugar twice a week. And I was a very high energy, I want to do well kid. However, when there is that much rigidity and rules around eating, and then I had to take sugar-free Jell-O to any birthday party I went to, and couldn't eat the extra snacks anytime that they were given, I developed an eating disorder. And I eventually started sneaking food. When I went to my friends' houses, I knew where everybody's cookie jars were. Mm-hmm. And especially sleepovers, when everybody was asleep, I would go to the cookie jar. And when I went to grandma and granddad's, I knew where they always had ice cream in their freezer. And so it was my way of rebelling, but not letting anybody know, because I still wanted to be the perfect daughter. But it was this secret thing I did. And it actually was, it continued for decades, this eating disorder that I had. I would binge and then try not to eat the next day. I was doing really weird things around food. And so the biggest loss, in my opinion, when it comes to having type 1 diabetes is that you can't eat as freely as anybody else. Someone says, here, do you want a cookie? Not that I'm a big fan of sugar now. I mean, my TED talk is called Sugar is Not a Treat. And luckily, I don't crave a lot of sugar these days, but I still want a treat every now and then. But even if someone says, here, do you want an apple? Here, do you want a banana? I can't eat it right away because when you inject insulin, insulin actually is very slow. And if I eat fruit, the spike of my blood sugar is very fast. So I always say I can't eat fruit unplanned. I only can eat planned fruit, because you have to take insulin about 30 to 45 minutes before eating a piece of fruit that the insulin is ready for the blood sugar spike. So that's really the biggest loss, is the fact that every meal you have, you have to think about how much glucose is in this meal, how much insulin do I need for this meal? Do I need to pre-dose before I start eating? And then secondly, the other big loss, if you will, is being active. I love being active. I'm very athletic. However, I must constantly be thinking about what's my blood sugar going to do with this activity. If I have too much insulin in my body, when I even go on a brisk walk, that can crash my blood sugar level, because the walk plus the insulin will take so much glucose out of my blood that then I have a quote low blood sugar. And I have to carry sugar with me anywhere I go. I actually sleep with sugar next to my bed. I have sugar in every purse I own. I have sugar in my car, because if I ever accidentally give too much insulin, which is frankly very easy to do, I'll need to eat sugar right away. And I even have a little orange. I always have, just in case I got low in the middle of talking to you guys. So now I am an expert when it comes to how to dose insulin properly. That's what I do. I help type 1 diabetics all around the world with this basically overwhelming, constant daily job. So when it comes to the loss of type 1, some people look at me and think, oh, you have to take shots every day. That sounds horrible. The shots are nothing. I've done so many millions of shots, I could care less about shots. The biggest thing that I miss, the biggest loss, is to be able to eat without thinking of how much insulin do I need? How much sugar is in this? What's my blood sugar going to do? Do I need to go on a walk now because my blood sugar is too high? Do I need to eat sugar now because my blood sugar is low? These are thoughts I have 24 hours a day, 24 hours a day. I have a glucose meter now. So you have to poke your finger, right? I poked my finger 15 times a day for decades, 10, 20, 30 years. And now luckily they have these continuous glucose monitors on, right? So I just wear the little thing. It's on my leg right now, so I can't show it to you. And it communicates my blood sugar to a little device. So that's a huge win. That's a huge, no more loss. No more like poking my finger every day. That loss is gone.
Yeah.
So now I just look at this thing and it tells me what my blood sugar is all day long. And this thing is incredible, because in the past, I'd have to set my alarm in the middle of the night, wake up at 2 a.m., get my finger poker out, poke my finger, find out what my blood sugar was. Or I was snow skiing and these never work in the cold. So if I wanted to know my blood sugar, I'd have to get off the mountain, go into the lodge, poke my finger. And then if I was riding my bike, I'd have to get off my bike, poke my finger. Right now, I just keep going and this thing will beep at me if my blood sugar is too high or too low, which is amazing. I sleep next to it. I don't have to set my alarm and wake up in the middle of the night. So this has been great. But most people literally don't realize the intensity of what's involved with managing blood sugar with type 1. They just think, oh, you have to do shots or, oh, you can't eat sugar. And I'll think, you know what? If I just couldn't eat sugar and had to do shots every day, that would be so easy. That would be so easy.
So thank you for sharing that and just the struggle. One, that people don't understand. And two, how it restricted, right? How it restricted what you can do. So I think it's more than just tangible losses. It's all those intangible losses that you lost as a child, right? That even you lost your childhood, right? Because all of a sudden you have this huge responsibility. Like a 7-year-old has this responsibility. And I remember talking to one other client that was worried about that was diabetes or was struggling with the same thing. And she just wanted to live her life and she could not do that because of this. So what are some of those kind of losses that you have? How did it impact your emotions?
Being a very adventurous person, I always wanted to do one of those 3-day out in the wilderness, figure out how to eat and sleep by yourself things. And that was the only thing that I could never do. They're like, yeah, you can't really go out there by yourself for 3 days. Because I'd have to bring food with me, obviously. So that was one of the only things I could think of that I couldn't do. But actually, this is type 1 diabetic scuba dive all the time. However, in my 20s, I tried 3 different doctors to sign my paper so I could get certified to scuba dive. And none of them would sign it because of the risk of having a low blood sugar if you're way down in the ocean, right? And then how do you get up fast enough or how do you eat sugar when you're, 30 meters
underwater?
Yeah. Right. So, wow. So those are the only, in terms of what I couldn't do, those are the only 2 things I couldn't do, big, activities. But there's a really inspiring type 1 who he's in his 20s, and he wrote a book called Why Getting a Chronic Disease is the Best Thing for Having an Extraordinary Life. And I really work with my patients and myself to embrace that mindset clearly, because you have it right now. We have no date for a cure. Every single day, if it's a Saturday or a Sunday, if it's a Christmas holiday, if I'm going on a vacation, I'm bringing my diabetes supplies. There's no vacation from it. There's no, I'm going to take a break. Not a single day have I been able to not think about managing my blood sugar and bringing my insulin. And managing the supplies with insurance companies is a whole nother thing. We won't even go there. But I don't really like to think, it's not healthy if you're going to have this thing every day for the rest of your life to hate it or constantly think about how much you're missing out on. Mm-hmm. So I work with myself and with my clients to do all we can to think about how outstanding we are. And if you look at that word, it means you stand out. It means that you don't blend in, right? You're outstanding. And the book, Why Getting a Chronic Disease is the Best Thing for Having an Extraordinary Life, every chapter is a attribute that he feels diabetes gives us: responsibility, empathy, critical thinking skills, higher desire to eat healthier foods, higher motivation to exercise, higher motivation in general to take care of yourself, to counteract the negativity that the chronic disease does to you. And frankly, if I look at my high school friends, eat healthier and exercise more than any of them because I have this motivation. And I also did my TED talk on sugar is not a treat because I have been aware of what's in sugar, what has sugar, what sugar does to the body since I was seven. I can't mindlessly eat a poppy seed muffin. I can't mindlessly have a chocolate cake. Every time I have those things, I have to think, how much am I going to have? How much insulin do I need? How am I going to balance my blood sugar through this? So I have the gift of really not wanting to eat all that crap. It's too much work. You know, people say, oh, can you eat this? Can you eat that? And I always say, well, yes, of course, I can eat anything I want. Is it worth the trouble to me to potentially have a high blood sugar that gives me a headache and then makes me feel like crap, or a potential for a low blood sugar if I dose too much insulin? There's just a lot of work involved when I eat sugary things. And oftentimes, if you want to give me a cheesecake, that's not, I'm like, no, I'm not going to do the work for that. Now, if you give me a chocolate cake, I'm a little bit more willing to do the work involved. So I make choices on what is worth it or not, you know?
So, I love that.
So it's really important when you live with this thing every day to focus on your strengths, to focus on all of the positives, not to mention that it's given me an incredible career where I get to give back every day. I have a family right now with newly diagnosed. I have a couple of different families and they are dying and desperately looking for help. And I get to help them. And that's my career, is I get to help people. So yes, there's a lot of loss, but I really like to focus on all the strengths.
I love that, Jody. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing. And also just sharing that perspective of focusing on the strength than the loss. Even though the loss is there, you focus, like, that's why we call it giving it meaning. And when you serve others, you find that meaning. And that's why what you do, Jody, is so big. It's huge. Thank you for doing that, by the way. I want to share with everybody out there, if you have not, we should all check out Jody's TED Talk, Sugar is Not a Treat. Like, I want my kids to watch that. Sugar is not a treat, because guess what? We see it all the time. You could even go to a doctor's office. I'm going to bust my doctor here. And they give the kids, I ask my doctor, is that a real treat? After watching your TED Talk, my doctor's giving my kids a candy. And I said, is that a treat? He goes, it's sugar-free. Is that true? Anyway, we'll leave it at that, you know. So thank you for doing that talk. Sugar is not a treat, darling.
In the talk, I do admit that I'm not perfect. I'm not saying that I'm going to look down on anybody who eats sugar. The problem in today's world is that people eat it three times a day, every day. They have their mocha for breakfast, or their pancakes with who knows what, or their pastry. And then they have their chocolate chip cookie at lunch with their white bread and their potato chips. And then they have their spaghetti and garlic bread, or, you know, they drink their sodas, right? They have their dessert. It's just, and the thing that really also bothers me is what's fed to children at birthday parties. It's just, it's so toxic and it's way too accepted on a daily basis. And it's, the fact is that sugar doesn't optimize your health. It doesn't optimize your mood. It doesn't optimize your creativity, your productivity. When you eat healthy, the body is healthier. I mean, that's not a shocking statement. And when you don't eat healthy, you literally are affecting every area of your life, because it's feeding who you are. It's feeding how you show up. It's feeding how much you can focus. It's feeding how much you have creativity, and it's feeding your emotions. It's feeding how well you can interact with other people. And so it's this kind of silent weapon, in my opinion, slowly dumbing down our population. Because when we don't eat foods that really make the body feel vibrant, we approach life with a less vibrant self. Our relationships, our work, our productivity, everything is affected because our body is not optimized. That's the real tragedy, in my opinion, is the effect that many people don't even connect. It's so well accepted to have the pizza and have the cereal and have the sugary snacks that nobody even mentions it as a problem. It's just part of society. It's just what everybody does. It's just what's for sale in the grocery store. And it's very sad to me. I mean, if we're going to talk about loss, that's a huge loss. That's a worldwide loss.
It is a worldwide loss. Like, oh, Jordan, we could talk that one. We can talk till, oh, yeah. However, I'm just going to spare Darlene from hearing all this because even in my own family, we've had fights about it. And I say, instead of having, because it's an accepted thing, instead of buying a kid a big bag, give her one or two. Like, giving sugar, which in a bag does not mean you love that kid more than, or anyway, yeah, totally hear you. I just love this so much. I could totally go on. And as you say, nobody's perfect. However, if we do our part, we could save the world.
Absolutely.
What do you have here?
Yeah. This has been so good, Jordy. I want all our friends out there who are listening, please check out Jordy. Follow her. Jordy, if someone wanted to connect with you, how would they find you?
So the best way is probably through my website. And if you know of anybody that has type 1 diabetes anywhere in the world, have them reach out. I can help. I work virtually. I can help type 1s anywhere in the world. I do not work with type 2s because a lot of people will contact me because of someone they know that has type 2. I don't work with type 2s. I very specialize in type 1s, and I would love to help anybody with type 1. And on my website, which is Dr. Jordy N. D, and I'll spell that, D-R-J-O-D-Y, and then N as in naturopathic, and D as in doctor. So drjodynd.com, and there's contact, you know, option at the bottom of the website, but there's also a free application if you want to have, an option to have a free talk with me if you have type 1 and are interested in learning about working with me. There's a little tab that says work with me, and then you sign up for a free Zoom call with me. But the website is the best way to contact me, drjodynd.com. And the ND is a whole nother story about why I became a naturopath instead of an MD, but we'll probably have to do that another time.
I love that. Thank you, Jordy. Awesome. Thank you. We got the website. I'm sure all our friends and family who are listening, they'll be sharing this information. And just before we close, it's been just nothing but a joyful time. I've learned so much from your story. Is there any last words you'd like our listeners to get from our talk today?
Yes, I would love to. It's the same three takeaways that I gave at the end of my TED Talk. And because the majority of people listening are probably not type 1 diabetic, these three tips are good for everybody. And the first one is, have protein for breakfast. Skip the mochas and the vanilla lattes and the bagels and the pastries and the cereal, because that is going to be on an empty stomach, a very big sugar spike. And that can set you up for roller coaster of energy for the rest of the day, of your moods for the rest of the day, for your ability to focus, all of that. So starting your day with a blood sugar stabilizing food, like scrambled eggs, like a non-sweetened yogurt, a protein drink, even leftovers from dinner. I like doing sometimes just, you know, an omelet with leftovers, veggies or meat, whatever you have, a piece of chicken. And that really helps stabilize your energy, your appetite, and your ability to focus for the day. So that's really important. That's one simple step anybody could take. The second one is, the next time you're feeling really hungry and you want a snack and you're tempted to have perhaps a not healthy snack, try having a glass of water, because being dehydrated by just 5% can make you feel like you are ravenous, but you're actually just thirsty. So try a glass of water first. And then the third thing, the third tip is, I have pizza, I have brownies, I have chocolate chip cookies. And because I make cauliflower crust pizza, I make almond flour and stevia chocolate chips. I make almond flour and monk fruit brownies. So you don't have to go completely without, if you just take a little bit of effort to realize that there's healthier options. There's millions of us that love low carb eating now. And because of that, there are some really great options to help us enjoy this low carb lifestyle. So those are my three tips.
Oh, Jolie, thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing.
This has been so good. I'm taking that tip, protein first thing in the morning. Skip the bagels. Thank you very much. But thank you, Jolie. It's been so good. And again, if anyone would like to connect with Jolie, we're going to put it in our chat below. And thank you, Jolie.
Yes.
We'll have to get you back because we still have so much to talk about. I can just see it. Just follow Jolie and you'll see there's some unconditional self-love from this lady. And I'm looking forward to learning so much from you. Until next time, let's connect.
Okay. Thanks, Jennifer.
Bye.
Bye.